And now it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use. And Uncle Dennis suggests that you have a pencil and paper handy so you can write down something of interest to you and remember it later. If your brain is half as bad as mine, you really need to write things down. Let's start off with announcements here. The California Native Plant Society Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team is having a restoration this Saturday, January 25th, 2014, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. In celebration of Martin Luther King Day this past week, we have joined in with the Santa Cruz County Volunteer Center, fellow nonprofits, and community groups for Volunteer Service Day. Once again, no rain in sight since we last worked at the ranch. We will continue with our removal efforts despite some not-so-optimal conditions. It's a little better when the ground is damp, so you can pull out that French broom. They'll see you there. Directions to Quail Hollow Ranch. Take Graham Hill Road north from Santa Cruz, come down the hill into Felton, turn right on East Ziandi Road, go up a couple of miles, turn left on Quail Hollow. The park entrance is on the right, a half a mile up the road. They meet in the gravel parking lot on the left side of the entrance road. The Habitat Restoration Team is a volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping you restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Wear comfortable layered clothing. Bring something to drink. You'll probably be taking that clothing off and drinking that drink, because it's bound to be warm, and do bring lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine. There ain't no rain, so it's going to be shine. If things get particularly hot and unpleasant, they do call it a day. Tools are provided. Bring gloves and water. For more information, contact their program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 462-4041, or email her at redwoodrn, that's R-E-D-W-D-R-N, at pacbell.net, or visit their webpage at www.cruzcnps.org, that's C-R-U-Z-C-N-P-S.org. Great folks, they've been doing it forever. Here's the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field. Last week, we were excited to let you know about a significant victory you helped us achieve for wild buffalo. Yellowstone National Park has rejected a proposal to remotely vaccinate wild buffalo with bio-bullets containing RB51, an experimental and ineffective livestock vaccine developed for use in cattle. Buffalo will now be spared 30 years of pursuit by park rangers randomly shooting them with an ineffective brucellosis vaccine that was never intended for use in wild buffalo. It is not often that we get to celebrate a meaningful victory for the buffalo, so please take the time to appreciate the positive impact you have made for these gentle giants. Well done. We are also very happy to report the Montana Department of Livestock announced that they will postpone attempts to capture and vaccinate wild buffalo in the Hebgen Basin this year. While MDAL still intends to move forward with these plans, the buffalo will have a respite for at least this season. The MDAL has been directed to update a vaccination environmental assessment, which was originally completed back in 2005. When the EA has been completed, it will be available for public comment, and we will call on you to help us thwart the MDAL's plans. We sincerely appreciate, and the buffalo will benefit from, the thousands of letters you sent to Montana Governor Steve Bullock and your members of Congress. Pressure came from you and made a difference. Again, well done. While these two frivolous and controversial vaccination plans have been averted, livestock interests are still aiming to secure tens of millions of your tax dollars to vaccinate wild buffalo and elk, as well as allocate funding for nefarious birth control experiments on ecologically extinct wild buffalo. The hotly debated federal farm bill is up for reauthorization, and hidden within this legislation are the two aforementioned provisions that pose serious threats to wild buffalo. Five more wild buffalo were killed this week by state and treaty hunters in the Gardner Basin along Yellowstone's northern boundary. A sixth was nearly killed when a 15-year-old boy we wrote about last week fired numerous shots at another bull, wounding him. The bull walked into Yellowstone National Park, where the boy could not legally pursue him. Park rangers tracked the bull, intending to kill him and end his suffering. When the Rangers found the bull, he wasn't bleeding from his nose or mouth, so they let him live. Because this bull walked away from his hunter, he was not reduced to possession, i.e. killed or tagged by the hunter, and the boy was allowed to shoot at the third bull, which he did, finally killing him. As of this writing, only a few wild buffalo have migrated across the Yellowstone-Montana border. As they roam over and across the firing line between the park and neighboring Montana, one day buffalo are huntable, and the next day they are out of bounds to hunters. Hunters eager to make a kill can be seen scoping the park boundary as they wait for one of America's last wild buffalo to cross the imaginary line. Wild buffalo in the Gardner Basin have barely been able to explore new areas of habitat they were recently granted. Volunteers are needed, and intense field season is expected in wild bison country. Buffalo Field Campaign invites you to join us on the front lines here on the edge of the world's first national park to help defend America's last wild buffalo. If you can spare a couple of weeks, a month, or stay with us for the rest of the season, we welcome your participation. The Buffalo Field Campaign provides room, board, gear, and training, while the wildlife and wildlands will provide incredible inspiration. Please visit our volunteer page to fill out the application, email our volunteer coordinators, or call them at area code 406-646-0070. Bring your passion and your ideas. See you on the front lines. For more information, visit their webpage at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And if you do find out something you want to send to them, like money, address it to Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, the zip code 59758, area code 406-646-0070. And do remember that the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife is soliciting comments and information on the status of northern spotted owls in this story by Rob DiPerna of the Environmental Protection Information Center. On January 21st, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife issued an announcement soliciting comments on the proposed listing of northern spotted owls as either threatened or endangered under the California Endangered Species Act. The comment period is designed to allow stakeholders and the general public to provide input to the department to be considered as part of its status review for northern spotted owl in California. Comments must be submitted to the California Department of Fish and Wildlife by May 1, 2014, in order for the information to be considered by the department as part of its status review and preparation of a status report. In September of 2012, the Environmental Protection Information Center filed a petition with the California Fish and Game Commission requesting that they list northern spotted owls as either threatened or endangered under the California Endangered Species Act. Last August, the commission voted to accept EPIC's petition, finding that the requested action may be warranted, thus making northern spotted owls a candidate species for listing under CESA. Last December, the commission adopted its formal findings for the decision, thus triggering a one-year period in which the California Department of Fish and Wildlife is charged with conducting a status review for northern spotted owls in California and preparing a status report with a recommendation for the commission to consider at the final listing decision hearing. Quote, "We are confident that the best available science and information will show the northern spotted owls face a multitude of severe threats to their survival in the wild in California, and that listing the species under CESA will be deemed warranted by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife," said Rob DiPerna, EPIC's industrial forestry reform advocate. Again, quoting, "All the numbers indicate northern spotted owls are in real trouble in California and indeed range-wide. Listing under CESA will clearly a necessary component of our approach to conservation of this iconic and imperiled species range-wide," unquote. Prior to making its final listing decision, the California Fish and Game Commission will solicit further comments on the status report produced by the CDFW. EPIC will continue to engage in this process and will continue to advocate for listing northern spotted owls and for the conservation and recovery of this iconic species in the wild in California and across their range. For more information, go to www.wildcalifornia.org. And a river nearly runs dry. The San Lorenzo is at its lowest January level ever. This story by Jason Hoppen of the Scotts Valley Sea Nile. One sign that something is going enormously awry are the coyotes in Paradise Park. The Riverside Hamlet is home to all manner of wildlife, but coyotes are an infrequent guest. Yet with no winter to speak of, the U.S. Drought Monitor this week declared the entire Central Coast under an extreme drought. The coyotes have been improvising. "It's so dry up in the hills, they come down looking for water," said Mark Hazy of Paradise Park, where this time of year usually brings big rains and the threat of floods. "Last year, we had a big flood the day before Christmas Eve. A lot of our people had to evacuate. This year, nothing." But the San Lorenzo River isn't much relief. Usually a winter menace, the backbone of the county's second-largest watershed is at its lowest January level since the U.S. Geological Survey measurements began 77 years ago, and lower even than the famous drought years of 1991 and 1977. The San Lorenzo River is not alone. The Sacramento, Trinity, Russian, San Joaquin, Eel, and North Fork of the American Rivers have all set January low records, while the Yuba, Tuolumne, Mercy, said and more have approached, and absent sudden rains could still surpass them. Last Friday, Governor Jerry Brown declared a statewide drought following weeks of pressure, including Assemblyman Luis Alejo, a Democrat from Watsonville. Brown asked residents to cut water use 20%, and the declaration makes water transfers between agencies easier, but what the county needs is rain, and on that front, politicians can offer little more than prayer. Brown's action came a day after the U.S. Drought Monitor downgraded drought conditions on the Central Coast to severe and said many of the conditions for the most serious designation, exceptional, are already in place. Those designations forecast major crop losses and severe water restrictions. The problem is being driven by a massive high-pressure cell off the west coast, steering storms north before dumping them into the Midwest. Snowpack in California is less than 20% of normal. Fire officials have issued red flag warnings across large parts of the state, and no relief is in sight. The three-month National Weather Service forecast predicts warmer and drier weather than normal all the way through April. Farmers praised Brown's drought declaration, with Tom Nassif, president and CEO of the industry group Western Growers Association, calling on state and federal officials to convey even moderate rainfall from the Delta South and to, quote, operate at the highest end of their discretion within the existing rules limiting water exports to protect fish species, unquote, a statement that underscores the competition between farmers and fish. Local resource managers have been tightly focused on the water problem, particularly in Santa Cruz, where residents depend on the San Lorenzo River as a primary source of drinking water. "These kind of conditions are unprecedented. We don't even have these in our modeling," said Chris Berry, a watershed compliance manager with the city of Santa Cruz. The lack of rainfall is taxing Loch Lomond, a 9,200-acre-foot reservoir, meant to help the city through dry summer months. To maintain stream flows, the city is spilling more water into the San Lorenzo River tributary of Newell Creek than is coming in, and Loch Lomond is 15 feet lower than at this time last year. In places where rivers are shoaled up by sandbars, dry weather is also placing state fishery managers on the horns of the dilemma. At Scott Creek, officials haven't breached the river to let endangered coho salmon in, instead protecting the hundreds of lagoon smolts waiting for a path to the sea that could be jeopardized by a sudden rush of water. "There's thousands of fish that are ready to head out, but they're stuck," said John Ricker, County Water Resources Division Director. That has led to another anomaly as strange as coyotes in Paradise Park. Fish swimming up the wrong river. Berry said he's seen photographic evidence that coho, presumably shut out of Scott Creek, are making their way into the San Lorenzo River. Throughout the county, residents and businesses divert water from overtaxed streams, a water source protected by strict state water rights laws. Ricker said the county could begin talking to some of those users about cutting their water use. Quote, "It does help focus people's attention to really try to do something," Ricker said. It is not completely bleak. Soquel Creek hasn't dried up as it did in the early 1990s, and no one has talked about a building moratorium, which was effectively put in place in the early 1980s when the Soquel Creek Water District implemented a ban on new water hookups. But several water districts, including Soquel Creek, the Pajaro Water Valley Management Agency, and Santa Cruz Water Department, have tightened water restrictions. Toby Goddard, the Santa Cruz Water Conservation Manager, said they'll likely be in place through winter. "We're looking at something we've never seen before," Goddard said, estimating at least 2 feet of rain is needed to replenish the watershed. And there's a new Panon blockade against oil palm plantations in this story by Survival International, as found on the Earth First Newswire. 40 Panon families from the Malaysian state of Sarawak are blockading in protest against the Xinjiang Logging and Oil Palm Plantation Company for trespassing on their ancestral lands. The Panan from Long Jiaik, below the controversial Murum Dam, recently won a court case against Xinjiang for converting their land into oil palm plantations. The court recognized the Panan's rights over the oil palm plantation. However, Xinjiang is appealing the court's decision. The 40 families, led by their village chief, Tugang Matu, have now begun a blockade to stop Xinjiang continuing to trespass on their land and to demand compensation. Survival International has received a message from the village urging it to alert the media to their protest. The Panan have been fighting for many years to keep logging companies off their land. Oil palm companies are now moving into areas from where the valuable timber has been taken. The recent court decision is a major victory for the Panan, but they fear it will be ignored and the company will carry on as usual. Xinjiang has established large-scale oil palm plantations on Panan land, often without consulting the Panan. It is also one of the biggest timber firms in Sarawak and is operating on large parts of the Panan ancestral lands. And Japanese fishermen take cover to slaughter dolphins in the face of Western criticism. This reporting by Rardid Villar and Antoni Sladkowski, with editing by Nick McAfee of World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Japanese fishermen drove a large group of dolphins into the shallows on Tuesday and, hiding from reporters and TV cameras behind a tarpaulin, killed at least 30 as the annual dolphin hunt that sparked protest in the West entered its final stages. Both the U.S. and British ambassadors to Japan have strongly criticized the drive killings of dolphins, citing the terrible suffering inflicted on the marine mammals. Every year, the fishermen at Taiji in western Wakayama Prefecture drive hundreds of dolphins into a cove, select some for sale to marine parks, release some, and kill the rest for meat. On Tuesday, at least 30 dolphins out of the group of more than 200 held in the cove since Friday were herded by boat engines and nets into a killing area of the Taiji Cove. Fishermen waited in the shallow waters by the shore, some in wetsuits with snorkeling masks on their faces, wrestled the dolphins into submission and tied their tails with ropes to stop them from escaping. Before killing them, fishermen pulled a tarpaulin in front of the cove to prevent activists and reporters from seeing the killing. A large pool of blood seeped from under the tarpaulin and spread across the cove. A metal rod was stabbed into the dolphin's spinal cord, where they were left to bleed out, suffocate, and die. After a traumatic 4 days held captive in the killing cove, they experienced violent captive selection, being separated from their families, and then were eventually killed today, Sea Shepherd Conservation Society activist Melissa Segal told Reuters. The annual hunt has been long a source of controversy and was the topic of the film The Cove, an Oscar-winning documentary that brought Taiji into the international spotlight. Activists say that out of this year's group of more than 50 dolphins were driven away to be sold to Aquaria. Those not killed on Tuesday were released, they said. The United Kingdom opposes all forms of dolphin and porpoise drives. They cause terrible suffering. We regularly raise the issue with Japan, said the British ambassador to Japan, Timothy Hitchens, in a tweet on Monday. Carolyn Kennedy, the U.S. envoy to Tokyo, has also said that she was deeply concerned about the hunt. Japan maintains that killing dolphins is not banned under any international treaty and that the animals are not endangered. Yoshinobu Nisaka, the governor of Wakayama Prefecture, where Taiji is located, rejected Kennedy's concerns. Quote, "Dietary culture varies, and it is the wisdom of civilization to mutually respect others' standpoints unless the world faces a lack of resources," Nisaka was quoted by Kyoto News Agency as telling reporters. The dolphin hunting season runs yearly from September to March. Sea Shepherd Conservation Society said around 600 marine mammals had been killed this season before Tuesday's slaughter. Monitoring is difficult, with fishermen erecting tarpaulins over their killing area and blocking access to the cove. More information can be found at www.cshepherd.org. And the Trinity River Restoration Program has been brought into question in a coalition letter. The Environmental Protection Information Center joined with a coalition of 21 groups and individuals led by the California Water Impact Network in asking the Trinity River Restoration Program be put all channel rehabilitation projects on hold pending a thorough review. The group noted in a letter that the projects are causing rather than mitigating environmental harm, that necessary watershed rehabilitation projects are underfunded due to the channel revamping efforts, and that a new county bridge is needed at Bucktail because of higher fishery flows that have undermined the structure. The project's channel rehabilitation work consists of bulldozing the river's edge to create juvenile salmon habitat, an activity equivalent to a clear cut on a wild and scenic river. An embargoed draft report by the TRRP's Science Advisory Board found that the benefits of the main stem projects to salmon are not significant, and that the program has veered significantly from the intent described in the 2000 Trinity River Record of Decision. Tens of millions of dollars have been spent on the main stem projects with few results and multiple negative impacts, including turbidity, the spread of noxious weeds, reduction in public access, noise, truck traffic, impacts to agricultural water systems, and the filling of adult steelhead holding habitat. The 2000 Trinity River Accord of Decision called for a break in these projects to evaluate them before more main stem work is done, said Tom Stokely, an analyst for CWIN. The Science Board's draft report clearly shows that the expected benefits of these projects have not materialized. Spending millions more public dollars on this project cannot be justified at this time. Zeke Grader, the executive director of the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations, concurred with Stokely, noting that the Trinity River Restoration Program has produced scant results for the boatloads of money that have been invested. "We've got to do better," said Grader. "That money could have been spent on reviving our fisheries through watershed and tributary restoration. That's where we'll get real results." Steve Townsend of the Trinity River Guides Association said the projects have decimated much of the adult steelhead holding habitat upstream of Douglas City. "Bucktail is one of the last good holes left in that part of the river," said Townsend. "A new Bucktail bridge should be built before any other main stem alterations occur." They also propose eliminating the existing public access to the river at Bucktail, moving it downstream. The proposed Bucktail project will be a disaster for the river, the fish, and the public. Barbara Vlamis of the Aqua Alliance of Chico said the Science Advisory Board's report nullifies agency attempts to justify the project. Quoting, the Science Board said the increases in juvenile rearing habitat were not statistically significant from channel rehabilitation projects, and the program's formal scientific hypothesis testing is frequently lacking, observed Vlamis. The Bureau of Reclamation is being dishonest with the public when they claim the benefits outweigh the 25 significant impacts from these projects. Gary Graham Hughes of the Environmental Protection Information Center in Arcata said a full environmental review based on current conditions on the river must be conducted before the North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board allows further restoration work. Public participation is crucial for developing real solutions, and we also need a couple of wet years to see if the existing projects will provide any benefits, said Hughes. There's plenty of habitat restoration work to do in the watersheds and tributaries below the dam. Those tributaries will become increasingly important as salmon refugee if Trinity Lake reaches Deadpool and the river dries up from continued drought. Bill Jennings of the California Sport Fishing Protection Alliance said the projects evoke another troubling conservation effort, the Bay Delta Conservation Plan. If the Trinity River Restoration Program is any indication of how the Bay Delta Conservation Plan will use science and adaptive management to restore the Delta ecosystem, we're in deep trouble, Jennings said. We can't promote environmental destruction under the rubric of conservation. It's dishonest, it's catastrophic for fisheries and wildlife, and it's an affront to the public that pays for these boondoggles. For more information, you can go to www.wildcalifornia.org. And the fight is on to save rare Utah fishes. For almost 30 years, a water district in southern Utah has been sucking up the Virgin River directly above some of the most important habitat for two rare fish species, the wound fin and the Virgin River chub. The excessive withdrawals are creating reduced flows and increased water temperatures, both of which have driven these two federally protected fishes toward the brink of extinction. The Center for Biological Diversity and their friends began legal work to save them, filing a notice of intent to sue the Washington County Water Conservation District, which supplies water to the city of St. George, where per capita water usage is 50% higher than in Las Vegas. The water district was supposed to allow at least 86 cubic feet of water per second past its water diversion, but typically it's only about 3 cubic feet per second, barely enough to keep the riverbed wet. If something isn't done to stop excessive withdrawals from the Virgin River, two fish species found nowhere else on the planet will be lost forever, said the center's Noah Greenwald. And the court protects California redwoods, rejecting a vineyard plan. The center and allies celebrated a victory when a California judge rejected a winery's plan to clear-cut 154 acres of Northern California forest to plant vineyards. Artesia Winery's Forest to Vineyard project included plans to clear-cut 50 to 75 old coast redwoods and Doug firs, as well as oaks and manzanita. But the ruling determined the project violates the California Environmental Quality Act by failing to look at alternatives to avoid forest destruction, ignoring the carbon sequestration that would be lost, and wrongly dismissing the project's pesticides impacts. This decision means the redwood forest can continue to do what it does best, provide habitat for wildlife, and remove harmful carbon emissions from the atmosphere. For more information, go to www.biologicaldiversity.org. And that's all the time we have for news this week on the Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is presented every week on Thursday nights right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM. If you'd like to listen to a rebroadcast of this Earth First Update, listen in tomorrow afternoon right here on Free Radio at 3 o'clock for another edition of the Earth First Update. You can, if you live in Moscow, Idaho, please tune to KRFP 90.3 FM, their new high power frequency, on Monday nights at 9:30 p.m. Or if you want to download or listen to a podcast online, go to www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, for all.net. And search for Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. We want to thank you for listening. Do remember that Free Radio Santa Cruz is supported by the community. And if you're part of that community, we urge you to help support the station. And we're also looking for a new transmitter site. So if you know somewhere where we can put a transmitter somewhere on the east side of Santa Cruz, please send an email to frsc@freakradio.org. Thank you once again for listening.